This is the Prairie Prophets Podcast with host Brandon Butler.
Joining us today on Prairie Prophets is Jason Sumners, the Deputy Director of the Missouri Department of Conservation. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Brandon.
Well, we've known each other for quite a few years, and I've watched your career with the department evolve over time. We came to know each other when you were the deer biologist working through chronic wasting disease, which was a pretty big deal when it came onto the landscape here in Missouri. The good work you did there has led you through a number of promotions, and now you're in the deputy director role at the Department of Conservation. What does that entail?
Yeah, so Department of Conservation, you know, we're responsible for management and restoration of the fish, forest, and wildlife resources of the state. And we have, you know, three deputy directors that report directly to the director of the agency, and each one of us is sort of responsible for a pretty significant chunk of the agency. And the part that I'm responsible for, we call resource management. So all of our biologists, fisheries or wildlife, our foresters, our private land staff that work out on the ground, all the way up to, you know, our scientists that are informing management decisions, and then our law enforcement team that is, you know, responsible for enforcing the wildlife code.
So you get to do all the really fun stuff while the other two deputy directors work on infrastructure and communications and...
Yeah, definitely. I think I have the pleasure working on the things that we're directly passionate about. All of that other stuff is absolutely critically important, you know, from outreach and engagement to the public, to private landowners, to the business operations of running a, you know, modern conservation agency, which includes a, you know, we're blessed to have a lot of infrastructure here in Missouri to support getting citizens outdoors, to support providing the great opportunities we have, whether that's from managed wetlands to well-stocked fisheries that requires a pretty extensive hatchery network. So yeah, we've got a lot of things that we're responsible for.
Well, one thing I appreciate is when the right person is in the right role. And I feel that way about you. You're a friend, but you're also a professional that I look up to and respect because you've really put the work in from your education through the different steps you took along the way to get to this role. Just so people know a little bit more about you, kind of tell us the beginning of this love of wildlife, how that went through college, and then the steps you took to end up in this deputy director role.
Well, I've always appreciated your support, Brandon, and friendship for that matter. You know, from a very early age, like many in the conservation field, had a very strong, you know, emotional connection to the outdoors, but also the emotional connection to friends and family in the outdoors. And some of my earliest, you know, childhood memories are stumbling along in the dark with my dad chasing coonhounds across, you know, the edge of the prairie, quite frankly, and the edge of the Ozarks in Benton County. And really, I think that, you know, attachment to place and to people really formed my love and passion for conservation and more specifically, you know, white-tailed deer. And so went to the University of Missouri, got a bachelor's degree in fisheries and wildlife, and then had the chance to go to Mississippi State and be part of the biology program and the wildlife program there and really dig into deer management with Dr. Steve Damaris and other names that folks in the deer world would know, like Bronson Strickland and Randy DeYoung. And then had the chance to go to South Texas for a while and experience the real intersection of private management of wildlife and private lands and all the challenges that folks face there. And then when the opportunity in 2008 came up to return to Missouri as a private lands deer biologist, it was a dream come true, quite honestly, to come back home and work on something I was super passionate about, you know, grew up in Missouri. And so I thought I'd found my dream job, right? A deer biologist, get to spend my time working on managing deer. As you mentioned, about 13 months into being here, we found chronic wasting disease, which really challenged me both personally and professionally. So here you are, passionate about a species, and then you have this potentially devastating disease that certainly is going to change the way that we think about hunting in North America, the way that we think about management of one of our iconic wildlife species. Really put me in a spot where I think some of those unknown characteristics that I apparently had started to blossom and recognized that, and others recognized in me the potential to lead teams and lead them in a direction of something I'm super passionate about. And so, yeah, it's led to opportunity to lead our wildlife division for a short period, lead our science branch, and then now step up into this role as a deputy director to help really shape the future of conservation in Missouri. And in this role, you know, one of the beauties is in the Missouri model in terms of the citizen support that we have, others across the country look to us to see what we're doing, the kinds of actions that we can take here because of the broad citizen support and respect that the public has for the agency. We really hold ourselves to a high standard to try to lead the way and provide an example for others to try and experiment and push the envelope in terms of management of fish, forest, and wildlife resources.
Well, as you can hear, Jason has really good communication skills. And in my experience working with wildlife professionals, it's not always the case. A lot of these really, really intelligent, scientifically trained professional wildlife managers, they have a hard time talking outside of their little circle. You can write a white paper and it can be read academically by 100, 150 people and feel like that's a big success. And it is amongst your peers. But getting that information out to the masses, that's very critical for the support that you talked about for the department, for the initiatives. MDC does a really good job of that. If you don't subscribe to the Conservationist magazine and you live in the state of Missouri, you're really missing out. It's one of the best conservation magazines in the country. It's free, delivered to your home each month, full of great information on what you can do outdoors, but also what the department is doing to ensure conservation thrives across this state. And as Jason said, really across the country, as Missouri's always looked to as a conservation leader. But that's what I really appreciate about you, Jason, is your ability to take complex issues like chronic wasting disease and communicate them in a way that I and so many others can understand. So I'm always complimentary about your skills in that department, and I continue to be. You do a great job. Now, deer in the prairie, believe it or not, we probably wouldn't be sitting here doing this podcast if it wasn't for Rudy Raceline taking a deer in the prairie of Kansas. You know, Rudy is a stalwart of conservation. And the first time I went to his log home, which is here in central Missouri, I walked in and my heart sank a little bit because there was a whitetail on the wall that I thought for sure was a high fence deer. And I didn't think Rudy was that guy. And I said, well, where did you get that? And he said, Kansas. And I was thinking he's going to name one of these, you know, pay to shoot a deer places. He said, in the Flint Hills, in the prairie. And I said, that's a wild deer? And he's like, yeah, of course it is. And I thought, oh man, thank God. Because I thought for sure it wasn't. It looks unbelievable. It's a well over 200 inch whitetail, non-typical. And he said that he realized then that there's magic in the prairie for wildlife. And that really set him on this path of wanting to have prairie on his own property, which then spiraled into this whole Raceline Alternative Energy. And now what we're doing with Horizon 2 to restore prairie, restore riparian areas and marginal lands in agriculture country to native grasses. And the benefits for wildlife are, there's no end to the benefits for wildlife. Can you talk more scientifically about how prairie is so important to wildlife, maybe even deer specifically?
Yeah, we can talk about deer. And I think deer are an interesting species to talk about as it relates to the prairie. You know, prior to the Pleistocene extinction, they didn't exist there. They were primarily a more lowland swamp associated species. But with the loss of large predators across much of the landscape and a lot of other herbivores that could compete with them, they expanded into the prairie. And I think one of the reasons why they've been so successful is the same reason why we've lost the prairie in many cases in those grasslands, because they are highly productive systems. They have very fertile soils, and with ample rainfall, you can grow tremendous crops. But in those prairie systems or those grassland systems, especially if they're well managed, like some of the ones that you guys have been to, you know, recently, you got a wide diversity of species that provide tremendous forage. And especially forage early in the year to late in the summer. If it's really diverse, there's food there for a female to to produce the milk she needs to raise good, healthy, young fawns, which then ultimately transition into, you know, an early good start to life, which produce some of those giant bucks. And so I've had the pleasure of chasing, you know, specifically mule deer across the western parts of the prairie. And yeah, some of the most impressive animals you see are in that landscape. And I think in a well-managed way, there's food there for them to recover from the rut. So they go into that in a condition that produces good antlers the following season. But certainly grasslands are really, really important to a whole host of species. One of the groups of species we're most concerned with right now is certainly the decline of birds. You know, it's the 3 million bird loss over the last 30 years has certainly gotten a lot of attention, and a big driver in that is our grassland birds. We look at wetland associated birds, where we've had a significant focus on wetland restoration and conservation in North America in the last 30 plus years. And they're the one group of birds that are doing well, that are actually in many cases increasing, and it's because of that direct focus. And so that's why I'm really excited about, you know, the renewed energy behind and focus behind restoring grasslands, both for working lands and for alternative energy, because it gives us an opportunity to really promote the benefits of those systems in a way that benefits a broad suite of species that have been in decline.
Well, there's a grasslands conference coming up here in Missouri in the spring. The department's involved, the Conservation Federation, the Nature Conservancy, and so many other partners. Raceline's going to be a top sponsor of that, really, because I was so impressed with the wetlands conference that was recently held. It's great to see the collaboration around it. And there certainly does seem to be a buzz around grasslands and restoring prairie in lands that, you know, aren't really suitable for growing agriculture crops. What is the department doing specifically to support prairie restoration?
Yeah, so I think at the entry stage of it, it's kind of exciting because it's really all of the interest, or a lot of the early interest, is revolved around pollinators and the recognition of the critical role that they play in the ecosystem, both, you know, from agricultural purposes to the wide range of benefits they provide to us as humans. And so a lot of our focus, you know, really early on has been on trying to promote plantings or restoration, even in small patches, that benefit pollinators. The other thing that has happened over the last couple of years is the increased frequency of drought. You know, we've been in some pretty significant drought conditions, and folks that have traditionally relied on cool season grasses like broom and fescue certainly see the challenges of growing those in these hot, really dry summer conditions. And so it's resulted in increased interest from production landowners to diversify their forage, and certainly recognize that those cool season grasses are absolutely critical for a livestock operation. My father-in-law runs 120 head of mama cows, and so I completely understand how important that is. But again, it's a reflection of the diversity that's needed too, right? Then when it's dry, his pastures right now look pretty rough, you know, and so folks are recognizing that incorporating warm season grasses and other things into those systems helps them be more resilient from the changing climatic patterns that we've been seeing. And so we've been partnering with NRCS and soil water conservation districts to really emphasize restoration efforts and diversifying the forage systems for folks.
You know, coming from conservation into this role that's really agriculture and renewable energy focused, the people, the information, like, it's almost overwhelming how much cool stuff is happening in what we call sustainable agriculture. And I took a tour of a ranch in North Dakota. The guy used to have more of a traditional cattle operation, but he's gone to rotational grazing on native grasses, and he moves his cattle twice a day. Takes about 30 minutes, and they go into a quarter acre. They mow that down, and he does it again. He said the biggest problem he faces now is he's spending too much money on gasoline for his boat, because he's only working about an hour a day, and he's fishing and skiing. And it, you know, by returning his cattle to nature and letting these grasses, you know, naturally do their work and feed these cattle, and all he has to do is rotate them a couple times a day, I don't know what to do with myself. I'm not burning diesel in my tractors. I'm not doing all the things that you used to do, and he's enjoying life more. He's enjoying a better bottom line. So it's those little stories that are out there that are just so intriguing. You know, in our work together, Jason, in conservation, there were times where we butted up against agriculture. And it unfortunately felt like conservation and agriculture were at times at odds. Well, that's not true. There's certain little segments maybe of both that can butt up against each other, but primarily conservation and agriculture are working really well together, hand in hand on a lot of issues. How does the department approach the relationship with agriculture here in Missouri?
Oh, it's an absolutely critical relationship. You know, 93% of Missouri is in private ownership, and much of that private ownership is in some sort of agricultural production, whether that's row crop agriculture or grassland and pasture management, raising mama cows. And so, you know, our success and the success of individuals on the landscape are closely tied to one another. And so, yeah, I think we value as much as anything the relationship that we have with the ag community, and try to, you know, understand the challenges that they're up against and figure out how the efforts that we're responsible for leading really complement one another. As you mentioned, you know, there are places where it's just, it's not sustainable to try to raise crops, or even in some cases, we can change the way that grazing practices happen or alter them. And we know there are risks there too, right? One of the challenges for folks adopting more warm season grass into their system is the loss of forage opportunity during the time in which that restoration is occurring and trying to establish the native grasses. And so we've had a number of research projects trying to figure out how we speed up that process, how we might use cover crops and other things to kind of fill that gap. You know, we have a landowner cost share program in which we've tried to provide additional incentives on top of not only the cost of the planting and the conversion that occurs, but additional support per acre for a landowner to recoup some of those potential lost revenues that result from this period of transition. So I think we're always trying to understand the challenges they're up against and figure out how we can alter programs in a way that it's advantageous to a private landowner to be willing to adopt, and then be right there alongside of them to do that work. So we have identified what we call priority geographies. And so these are landscapes across Missouri where we have ecologically diverse species, we have systems that are relatively intact, and inside of those landscapes, you know, a couple in particular in West Central Missouri and across the western border of grassland focus. And so we've recently added some additional private lands conservationist staff to support and be there to help landowners as they transition through some of their traditional grazing practices, or even choosing to convert row crop lands into more sustainable grassland systems. So trying to be there alongside the landowner as they learn through what it might mean. We've supported University Extension. We've supported helping them get grazing specialists that again, it's an attempt to align the objectives of the landowner with good conservation practices that are beneficial to fish, forest, and wildlife, as well as meeting what the landowner desires.
One of the great services that the department provides is the private land specialists that are across the state. In episode 6 of Prairie Profits, we met with Brent Vanderlick at the Kirksville office of MDC, and we talked a lot about MDC's private land services. There's no end to the information that we could go into on what those people will do for the private landowner. I've personally had a private land specialist out to my farm. Can you talk a little bit more about that program, why it's so important to citizens?
Yeah, it's a really awesome, honestly, partnership that the agency has. Several years ago, we recognized that we needed to create a dedicated team, that their responsibility was to work with private landowners to implement conservation practices. So we have a team of, you know, north of 75 individuals that are largely stationed in USDA offices across the state. So they work right alongside soil water conservation districts and RCS biologists that leverage a lot of state and federal funds to implement conservation-related practices. And so they are a tremendous resource for any landowner in the state, or land manager for that matter, that have interest in implementing conservation-related practices. And And there's a whole slew of acronyms and programs and which one do I sign up for and what does it mean and how do I get through it? They are the translators of all of that information to figuring out what a landowner wants and what their future desired condition is to how do we get there. And so the easiest way to find them is to simply go to our website, mdc.mo.gov, and look for the My Local Contact. And you just pull it down, you find the county that you're in, and it will pop up your private land, community private lands conservationist for that particular county. And they're an invaluable resource for us in terms of leveraging not only state dollars, you know, we have our own landowner cost share program, but also leveraging federal dollars for a lot of the work that we're talking about.
We're definitely guilty of the acronym soup. You know, I've had a few listeners, a few viewers of the TV show say, you got to define what those are. And we've been guilty of it in this podcast. We've talked about NRCS, which is the Natural Resources Conservation Services. It's part of USDA, and they've got a bunch of acronyms that I can't even tell you what all of them mean, but there's money out there. That's the point. There's money available to private landowners through the federal government, through the Department of Conservation, and other sources that you can use to do conservation practices on your land. Because ultimately, if you're improving your land, if you're keeping your soil on your land and stopping erosion, if you're keeping that runoff from taking nitrogen and phosphorus and others into our waterways, then you're benefiting society as a whole. So I feel like that's money well invested. And if you have issues on your own property, you need to look into this because there's real chunks of money out there that can help you do better conservation practices right at home. So look up your local NRCS office, your local Missouri Department of Conservation private land specialist, and I bet you'll end up surprised at how much cost share money is available.
Yeah, there's tremendous opportunities. Another good source of support, and I'll give a shout out to one of our, you know, a couple of our giant NGO partners, Quail Forever, Pheasants Forever. You know, they employ a number of what we call farm bill biologists that are partially funded by state agencies, not just ours, but Arkansas and Kansas, a number of states employ them. And then they work with NRCS as well. And so, you know, if you're not in Missouri and you're in other places, then there are some opportunities and that's a good place to connect with.
Jason, we're what some might call middle-aged at this point. We've been around long enough to have known some of the legends that came before us in this conservation world, but we're also at a point where we can start looking to the future and thinking about what we want the future to look like when our turn is over. In your mind, and you're dedicating your whole life to conservation professionally, what does the future of conservation look like in Missouri and hopefully beyond?
I think the future of conservation in Missouri, I think we want to continue the legacy that we had where it was broad citizen support and recognition of the value that it provides. We recently completed a survey as we try to look at, you know, how does the work of conservation align more broadly with the citizens of the state? And we've traditionally, as conservation organizations, not only ours, but other state fish and wildlife agencies, really focused on hunters and anglers as primary users of the outdoors. And they absolutely are, without question. But this venturing into working lands, ensuring close working relationships with landowners and agriculture, but then a broader societal benefit that nature provides to people. I think over the next, you know, decade, we're starting to see a real shift in broader appreciation of how much we actually need healthy ecosystems and people as a part of that ecosystem to really thrive as people. We saw through the pandemic, folks flocked to the outdoors, right? They went hunting, they went fishing, they went hiking, they just went outside. And in many ways, it's a reflection of sort of where we are as people in terms of our mental and physical health. A survey of Missourians in 2020 indicated about 93% of them understood the role of nature and the outdoors in their own physical and mental health. And so as we try to venture into these other places, these other conversations about the role of healthy ecosystems and us in it and the importance that they play in our own health, I think is a bit of a groundswell of a giant transition in terms of the work of conservation. So I want to see us in a place in 30 years where we continue to have a broad citizenry that understands and appreciates the role of nature and healthy ecosystems in our own health and well-being, and that we start to talk about these whole systems together, and we don't just think about Fish, Forest, and Wildlife agencies of taking care of deer and turkeys, but also working with whatever community might be, whether that community is in downtown St. Louis or that community is in Bates County, Missouri, that has some, you know, local connection to the land, that we're living a bit in harmony with it and in balance with the ecosystem. So that's why we've got to continue to think about these other ways of partnering with folks and meeting communities where they are for conservation to be successful moving into the future.
Jason Sumners, Deputy Director of the Missouri Department of Conservation, thank you for your incredible insights and your time today.
Always a pleasure, Brandon.
Thanks for listening to the Prairie Prophets Podcast with host Brandon Butler.